Recorded live high atop the Jerry Sanford Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host Rob Floyd and special guest co-host Craig T. Adams. Tonight's topic, horror hosts. Well, hey everybody, welcome to the old podcast, or welcome back to the old podcast if you listened before, the one or two of you out there. And good evening, Craig.
Hello, it's wonderful to be here high atop the tower. I'm here. I'm not quite sure why I'm here, but
are any of us really sure why?
I don't
here?
Know, but it may have something to do with my work with some horror hosts.
Indeed, indeed,
and one especially.
Let's talk about that real quick. Your qualifications.
My qualifications.
Yes. Okay. Mr. Adams is. Joined the Dr. Madblood show many, many years ago, which you'll tell us all the details about that, and has played a plethora of characters on the show. I'm not sure how many are in a plethora, but it's a lot.
It's hard to keep your plethora tuned.
And if you've ever had your plethora untuned, you have a painful heck in
it. Yeah, it's really hard. Anyway.
Well, we'll go on tangents. It's fine. It's
okay, tangent. Yeah. Tangent.
But oh, yeah, you played a ton of characters on that show over the years.
Yes, I've been with Dr. Madblood since 1980.
Wow.
And I'm hoping I get it right sometime soon.
That's why you keep doing it, right?
Right. It started out, my wife and I were doing puppet shows in the Tidewater area. We had moved here in 77, and we had visited a year before. We'd visited my brother and his family and my grandmother, and they said, oh, there's this great, this was 76. Oh, there's this great show. It's on Saturday nights. It's after Saturday Night Live, and it's Dr. Madblood, and it's crazy. We weren't there long enough to see it that time, but we wound up life threw us some curves, and we wound up living here like a little over a year later. And so we started watching the show, and we enjoyed it. There are lots of things to enjoy about that show.
Yeah.
And so we were doing puppet shows, and I wound up making a puppet show for the local heart association called Cardio Man. The nice lady who worked at the heart association, who got us, you know, into working on that program.
Yeah.
We had toured the show around schools in the Tidewater area. And then WHRO, Channel 15, they somehow had like money left over at the end of their fiscal year. And they were looking for things to tape.
Mm-hmm.
And we wound up doing a video version of Cardio Man.
Oh, okay.
And the nice lady somehow wangled us Mike Arlo playing Cardio Man. So that's where I met Mike Arlo. And the nice lady, Leslie Kissel, she wound up talking to Jerry Harrell, who's Dr. Madblood, and said things about our puppets.
Mm-hmm.
So a little while later, this was about 79, mm-hmm. I had a meeting with Mr. Harrell at Channel 10. I took some of my puppets, some of the puppets Deborah mm-hmm. and I had made for a space-themed puppet show. Space Deputy. It was a space western.
Oh.
And so we had a lot of space oriented puppets. So I showed him we had like a black hole in space puppet, and we had a giant alien worm puppet. And so about a year later, got this request from Dr. Madblood, Jerry Harrell, to come on the show. They were doing a spoof of The Empire Strikes Back The Empire Strikes Back, and wanted to work some of the puppets into the show. So there was a request for a Yoda-like puppet, which we used our green-haired puppet that was originally made for a nutrition show, video for the Norfolk schools, and the green-haired puppet stole all of the meat in the world, And so anyway, so we decided that, okay, the Yoda character would be this green haired. And then my wife and I, we sort of had an argument over who would work the puppet. So she won and she was absolutely right. Cause she had the better voice for that character.
Oh yeah.
And so we taped that episode, and we also took some other puppets, some of our other space puppets that wound up being used in the show itself, The Empire Strikes Back. So also one of my first plethora of characters on the Mad Blood show was a character called Bubba Fat.
He was
sort of this mysterious and dangerous looking character. And there was something about my voice, because my voice was something like,
"We'll get him."
And so next thing I knew, I was being asked to join the show.
Yeah.
Because, Joe Pankew, the late Joe Pankew, had done the brain voice for a long time, and he had left the show, and for a while Mike Arlo was doing the brain's voice, and so I was asked to come and take over the voice of Brain, and I said yes.
Well, of course.
And that was in 1980, and my wife, of course, you know, came along because she did the yokel voice. So the two of us kind of joined there in August, September of 1980, and I wound up doing more characters, and as time went on, Deborah started doing more behind the scenes stuff, and there we were as part of the cast. So
yeah, I remember that first episode, The Empire Strikes Back. I remember sitting up late and watching that.
I do too. So anyway, I felt for a long time that this was in my blood. This is where I was supposed to be in the universe, because my parents used to watch. My family is from like outside the Philadelphia area.
Oh, okay.
And my parents used to watch Roland.
Oh,
and that was, you know, before I was born or when I was little.
Yeah.
When I was young, I started watching the monster movies whenever I could on television. And it was just like second nature. And I think it comes from my father's father was a projectionist at the local theater where my father grew up.
Cool.
And so my father, you know, grew up sitting in a movie theater while his dad was working. So as I was growing up, we would be watching television. We'd be watching movies on TV, and my father would say, "Oh, that's that actor."
Yeah.
And so I started memorizing the names of like bit character actors on old horror movies.
Yeah.
And we even had a little encyclopedia at our house of character actors from old movies, and I kind of memorized that.
Oh, that's cool.
So anyway, so I think the whole horror host thing was kind of in my blood. And so late in my teens, we got our own horror host, and I'll remember his name. And so I started watching our horror host, and it was, I remember movies we were, we were just talking about what movies. I started watching things like Phantom from Space.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I still love. I know a lot of people go, it's black and white and it's old.
Oh.
And no special effects and that. And things like Curse of the Faceless Man.
Oh, yeah.
Brain Eaters.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And we were just,
what, Fiend Without a Face.
We were just talking about Fiend Without a Face. I loved Fiend Without a Face, especially since it was they teased you for most of the movie. You didn't see the things until the very end. You know, I'm sure they only had enough funds for a certain amount of animation.
Oh yeah, and a certain amount of props.
So they props wanna, and stuff. Yeah,
but didn't want to mess up, so they didn't use it much.
That, I mean, that movie, that still scares me, but I, you know, I love it. And,
yeah.
And of course there was, you know, Jan in the Pan.
Yeah.
Brain that wouldn't die.
Which is one of those, I think, every horror host has shown at one time or another.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of those, it's, everybody always says, oh, it's so bad, but everybody seems to watch it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And love it, you know.
You know, that was very important to my young development. And
say no more, say no more.
Say no more. That, and there were some non-horror films that were shown as well, like the Carry-On films from England, the comedy films that had mostly the same cast, and it was really offbeat and semi-off-color humor.
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, watching that by myself when I'm 12 years old in the middle of the night.
Well, you know, that was me, because like you said before, Mad Blood came on after Saturday Night Live.
Right.
So here I am at 7, 8 years old, watching Saturday Night Live, getting most of it. And what I didn't, I mean, you know, my folks were probably awake with me watching it because they enjoyed that show. And sometimes one of them would stay awake for Mad Blood. Sometimes they would fall asleep on the couch or just go to bed and leave me to watch it.
Right.
But I'd have to stay up through Saturday Night Live, you know, stay up through the news, then Saturday Night Live. And then finally Dr. Mad Blood comes on.
Right.
And a lot of people don't get these days, or younger kids these days, since everything is so accessible. You know, back then we had like maybe 3 channels, a couple of UHF channels.
Mm-hmm.
There was no VHS. There was no DVD. There's no such thing as streaming. That was science fiction.
Right.
So you had, you'd look in the TV guide or the newspaper and, oh, you know, Brain from Planet Eris is coming on, or Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and Saturday night, Dr. Mad Blood. You're all week long, you're waiting for this, and finally you get to see it in the middle of the night, whether it's you and a friend or your parents or by yourself.
Yeah.
But it's that, you know, it's like that magic of, here it is, I've been waiting all week to get to see it. And I think the cool thing about the horror host, that for me always was so cool, is, you know, monsters were always considered a kid's thing. But here you are in the middle of the night, and there's an adult on TV who's saying, hey, come on and watch this with me. You know, I know it's cool, I know it's good, or I know it's bad, but we're going to have fun watching it. And it's okay. You know, it's okay to be into it and watch it, because there's somebody else who gets it in the TV there.
Yeah, I was allowed to, you know, stay up as long as it wasn't a school night.
Yeah. Yeah.
And around the same time that I started watching the monster movies, I also found Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine, and that kind of changed my life,
because,
you know, there was a whole magazine about the movies I was watching, you know.
Yeah.
It was like the, you know, the Wolfman, and I remember getting together with a friend of mine, acting out those scenes from the movies.
Awesome.
I was probably about 10 at that point. Wow, I'd never even considered at that point being an actor, but I guess that's sort of where that started.
That magazine, you know, it was the fuel for so many people. And a lot of guys who are big names now, I mean, you know, John Landis and guys like that, they always say, oh yeah, Famous Monsters growing up.
Right.
And I always say constantly, if it wasn't for Famous Monsters and Dr. Mad Blood, I wouldn't be doing, there wouldn't be Monster Fest today and stuff like that I do. They were both a big, huge influence on me growing up, and with my interest in monsters and science fiction and horror and stuff like that. The earliest I remember before Dr. Mad Blood, I had a couple of older cousins that lived in Carolina,
mm-hmm.
and they had the Aurora models and had Famous Monsters and Monster Times. And so I got a little bit of that from, you know, interest from them, and fueled my interest a little more. I remember seeing somewhere, they were in Murfreesboro, North Carolina, and they had a creature feature show. And I think all it was, though, was the word creature feature and an announcer and like a candle on a table.
Right.
It wasn't even a host.
Right.
That's my earliest memory of a horror type show. And then when Dr. Madblood, when I found that, discovered that, I was like, oh my, wow. You
know? Right. It was, it was kind of, it was when UHF stations showed up on TV in the 60s. because that they I had more places to watch,
yeah,
you know, places to tune in. And I wasn't always watching monster movies, because there was one station that they would show like a series of films from like the 30s. There was actually a series of Perry Mason movies. And I watched a whole night of those. It was like, you know, it would come on at midnight and it yeah. done at six, you know, on a Friday night. And I watched all of those. And oh, by the way, in the very last film, Perry actually marries Della.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that was, it was Warren William.
Huh.
And yeah, that was a shock, you know, because I watched the TV series.
So. Yeah. I did not know yeah. about that. Wow.
So I was watching that, and I would yeah. you know, watch the horror films, and then it was Dr. Shock who showed up in the Philadelphia stations.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of him, yeah.
In my late teens. So I watched him for a number of years until I went off to college.
What was his set and everything like? Was it just him? Did he have other
It was kind of just him mm-hmm. and he was in like the tuxedo with the crazy hair. He was like an undead kind yeah. of person. And he would just come out and talk and do jokes and things like that. And occasionally if there was like a chase scene in the film, he would do the cutaway thing where all of a sudden there's chasing in the film and then cuts to him and he's running around his set, you know, just, you know, little stuff like that.
Kind of riffing off the Zachary Lee.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah. He was a lot like Zachary Lee. I hadn't seen Zachary Lee so much. I'd seen pictures of him and things like that. And then with the famous monsters, I saw articles about Zachary Lee, but eventually I learned about Zachary Lee, got to see some tapes of Zachary Lee, and I got to meet him once at a con.
Yeah.
So, that was pretty amazing. And the idea of like a horror host, that also sort of grew out of watching that there were a lot of hosted children's shows in Philadelphia. There was, there was Sally Starr, who was a cowgirl, and we had Uncle Pete Boyle, who was Peter Boyle's dad, and he would come on and he would do artwork, he would draw sketch things. Of course, all of them showed cartoons. There was Chief Halftown; he was a Native American host. So I watched all the hosted things. It was, you know, I was attuned to that early as a child, and then the horror host thing. It was just the next step.
Yeah. You know, and that's another thing too. When back then and up through, well, I guess even up through the middle 80s, late 80s, local television was a thing.
Yeah.
Locally made television, which you don't have anymore because everything's network affiliates and cable and streaming and all that, where there was open slots in the programming and the stations had to fill it.
Right.
I think a lot of the horror hosts, if I'm remembering a lot of this, or that I've heard from other people over the years, originally they worked for the station in another capacity.
Right.
Where they were the weatherman or one of the news anchors or whatever, you know, they did. And it's like, hey, we've got this open slot. We've got this package of horror movies to show. Would you like to dress up and introduce them?
Right.
Okay. And so the first couple of horror hosts kind of were born kind of like that.
Right. And it looked like most of them enjoyed it, even though I've heard stories that some of them, it wasn't their idea. It was the station said, you're going to do this.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to do this. And then, you know, they became famous doing it.
So. Yeah. But like you say, most of them seemed to like it as they got into it more.
Right.
Some of them, I mean, stayed with it for years. I mean, well, guys that we know, relatively local, like Count Gore, has done it for about as long as Mad Blood, and the Bowman Body,
right?
He was the same way. Worked for the station and boom, took off and was the Bowman Body forever.
Yeah. Well, before my wife and I moved here, we were living in Salt Lake, and while we were still in Salt Lake, we got cable TV. we got stations from California, and we got hooked on Bob Wilkins.
Oh, yeah.
We watched him smoking his big cigar.
Sitting in his rocking chair.
They were running him like on Friday night and Saturday night. And oh. I don't know if it was the same station or different yeah. stations, but we watched him and we had a good time.
And you kept America strong.
We kept.
Watch horror movies. That's keep America right. strong. Yeah, his slogan. America. Yeah.
So then we, there was a Friday in Salt Lake. There was a Friday night horror film, but it was not hosted.
Yeah.
There was, it was just, like you said, the candle, mm-hmm. creature features, the candle and yeah. a voice.
Yeah.
Hmm. Here comes the movie.
That was like one of the first things my wife and I did together when we started dating.
Yeah.
We would get together and we'd sit down and we'd watch the Friday night horror film and I would make a snackin' cake. And we'd have some Boone's Farm. And that was our date night.
That's a good date night right there.
Well, it was.
Well, depending on the movie.
Yeah, well, it worked out. So then, you know, when we got to Salt Lake, what we're watching in Salt Lake, mm-hmm. We started comparing notes to what movies we'd seen.
And, oh, yeah.
You know, what had moved us. In our childhood, you know, what films stuck in our heads. And then, so then we moved east and wound up here in Tidewater, Virginia.
Scenic Tidewater, Virginia, where the scenery's always changing.
You know, and it was like, well, we knew who the horror host was because we'd been told all about it by my brother and his family. So then, you know, things happened and we wound up on the Mad Blood Show, mostly did brain voice first couple of episodes. And then, you know, whenever
they needed another character,
whenever the doctor needed this character or that character, or I don't know how many, if any, were actually written for me, but
there was always, here's this character. Hey, Craig could do this.
Yeah. Right. Or, hey, do you have this costume or this? A lot of people have said, well, if you've got the costume, you've got the job.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So.
But quite a few of the characters you did, though, became reoccurring characters.
Yes, a few of them. There are a lot of one-time only, but then there were a few recurring characters. I did wind up taking over the role of Grinfield, Lacoudre's minion.
Oh, yeah.
That was originally done by Don Davis.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But in the 1984 Halloween special that mm-hmm. we did, I was asked to take over the role of Grinfield.
Now that was the one with Brides of Dracula, right?
Yeah, that was Brides of Dracula.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that one. That was a good episode. Yeah.
Yeah. It was. Wow. That was.
There was a lot going on in that episode.
There was a lot, and that was one that it took us. It took us about a month to actually shoot all of that at different locations, different places. And that one was a group effort as far as the writing was concerned.
Yeah.
Jerry Harrell wrote like most of it. And then there were parts that Deborah and I were asked to contribute to. Carter Perry, he was assigned editing the movie. that was quite a big deal. Yeah. But then that movie, Brides of Dracula, there are a lot of scenes where a lot of atmospheric scenes.
Oh, yeah.
With people walking all the way through the house.
Yeah.
One sequence after another, one shot after another, and a lot of those.
Yeah. It's beautiful
trips
film.
Through the house. Yeah, it was beautiful. A lot of those trips through the house were edited down.
You know, talking about editing and all the location shooting and how long it took to do it, that's another thing I was thinking of, is today, with technology, well, anybody can be a horror host. And a lot are. And we'll go into that in a little bit.
Yep.
But back then, where it was primarily on television, television.
Yeah, on a TV station.
Yeah, not streaming, not on YouTube, not on cable, anything like that. And it was shot on film and, you know, this limited budget to no budget, which you could work with in special effects. Really had a charm to it, though.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll go back and watch some of the older episodes now, whether it be on VHS or some that I've, that certain very nice people have given to me on DVD.
Yes.
You know, and I remember seeing them when I first saw them and, you know, enjoying the hell out of them as a kid, but watching them now and still have that kind of feeling watching them and the charm of the no budget. And some of my favorite bits are the ones where they're location shot, but you know it's overdubbed, the voice later, because you don't really see their faces very much or their... Those are some of the funniest bits, though. I don't know why, but they just play really well. A lot funnier than crisp, sharp, and you see everything they're saying.
Right.
You know?
There's no fun in that.
Yeah. You know? And like the whole bit, the Rama Bum-Dowd bits were shot kind of the same way. And those are hilarious. that's just my two cents.
About well, yeah. Yeah. No, we... there were a lot of times when we would get technology on the Mad Blood show, and it would like change everything.
Oh, yeah.
It's like there were times when we were shooting in a little studio, and you know we didn't have really good microphones, and but still the whole thing, you know, all together, it just like when we got say green screen.
Oh yeah.
That technology, when we were able to do that, you know, we could pop ourselves into...
Just change the game.
Yeah, we can pop ourselves into the movie.
Yeah.
Which is rather funny because when we did that at first in the early to mid 80s, people yelled at us for disrupting their movie.
Oh, wow.
And there was one set of shows that we did where we put up superimposed rude remarks during a film. And we did this throughout the film, you know, and it's like Devil Bat.
Oh,
and we got, people were upset because we were
ruining Devil Bat.
We're doing all of these rude super titles on this awful movie. Monster a Go Go.
Oh.
And then, so we stopped doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, just did our own shtick and the film and whatever commercials and all that. But then a few years later, these young upstarts came along and they've got themselves their little images in the corner and they're actually out loud making rude comments.
And they're genius.
And of course, yes, it's the everybody thought that was the best thing in the world. Oh well, it sort of short circuits. We have trouble watching that because it short circuits my wife.
Yeah.
Because, A, you know she's like I'm the one that makes fun of the movie.
Yeah, I watch.
And B, she shushes people in the theater when they talk. So it's, you know, that's kind of hard to watch that sometimes, even as humorous as it can be at times.
Yeah.
But, you know, there you go. Those young, you kids have no idea.
You kids with your big budget and your network backing and your...
We were doing that when you were still in diapers. Okay.
Now, the Mad Blood Show has been on... since 1975.
Yeah.
In one form or another.
Yeah.
And you said you came on, what, 79?
80.
80. In 80.
Came on in 80.
And in 80, it was still on Wavy then, right?
It was still on Wavy, and it was still...
Yeah.
It was
still, one of the... That was the NBC affiliate here in Tidewater.
Right. It was still on after Saturday Night Live, and then...
Now, on NBC, there was a horror host show on a major network.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Local
affiliate, but affiliate. Still,
yeah,
still, you know,
right.
But then it went to,
and then what happened was that the network decided to run a show at 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
So we got bumped to half an hour And
I remember that.
Yeah, it was basically an advertisement for the Army. And it was hosted by Twiggy.
Oh, geez.
By Twiggy.
Because when you think Army,
you think Twiggy. Twiggy. Yeah. And, you know, that was fine. But it's sort of, there were people who complained about that.
Yeah. Now, what for the half hour, it was just the Mad Blood bits, right, that you did? You didn't show anything?
Yeah. Eventually, my second season, the Mad Blood show turned into a half an hour show. Wow. With no movie. Well, that lasted for half a season.
Yeah.
and I think we were all just too tired.
Oh, yeah.
Because the half an hour full of stuff, that's a lot of work.
That's
a lot of work to do. So there were changes in the wind anyway. So
yeah.
we left Wavy and we went, the cable TV had shown up. And we wound up with being in sort of a syndicated cable. We were on versions of the show were on in New England.
Oh, wow.
This was like 82.
Yeah.
And 83.
Now, was this TVZ
at this point? No, it wasn't. No. Actually, we were on... deja vu. We were on...
Memories.
But we also were on WHRO on the PBS. We were on PBS stations around the state of Virginia.
Okay. Now it was, the first show was Dr. Madblood's movie.
And then it was Dr. Madblood's Night Visions.
Night Visions. Okay. Yeah. All right.
So that ran up in New England for a while.
Hmm.
And at the same time, we were doing the shows on public broadcasting stations in Virginia. And that lasted for a couple of seasons.
And was that still Saturday night?
Because
I know there was one show that was on Sunday night.
Yeah, there was. There was a version that was on Sunday.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not sure where it showed up in cable on New England, but there was at that point there was a Sunday version. Also, well, before that there was a time when Mad Blood, when it was still at Wavy TV 10, where it was on Saturday night. It was also on Saturday afternoon.
I remember that too. Yeah.
Yeah, there was, and a lot of times it was a different episode.
Oh,
too. Yeah. So there's that, and there was also, before I came on, there was a radio version. They were doing radio shows, half hour radio shows.
I remember
shows.
Hearing about that, but I never heard any of them.
Because like 3/4 of the Mad Blood cast were
local radio DJs. Yeah.
Local DJs. Yeah. So there, you know, all of these versions.
And it pretty much the same format through every incarnation, because it went
pretty much
from Wavy to HRO to TVZ to being on after Saturday Night Live, being on Sunday night, to be syndicated, be in the afternoon.
Right.
And then TVZ was on for a good long time, but they kept changing the time slot.
We were on TVZ. That ran for like 3 years.
Yeah.
And then we were off for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then we came back for our 20th anniversary. We came back for 1 year weekly.
Oh. Huh.
And then we went to once a month.
Yeah.
It was Saturday about 3 a.m.
Oh, yeah. I remember that one was hard to watch.
Yeah.
Hard to stay up for, but I remember that.
We would have to take a nap. By that time, we were, you know, having to take a nap.
Yeah.
And so we did that from 95 until 2002.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And then, when
we were on once a month on TVZ, also there was another station that was, they were running other horror hosts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we got to see Mr. Lobo.
Yeah.
He was on like earlier Sunday morning.
Yeah.
And so we
Who's
saw
a real
him.
Nice guy, by the way.
He's a real nice guy. He's a great guy.
Yeah. We got to spend a little time with him after Monster Fest this time. It was really pretty cool.
Yeah.
Got to hang out. And
he's also the heir of Bob Wilkins.
Yes. You know, that's true. So yeah. Yeah.
Lots of.
And if you have Roku out there, anybody, check out the Roku channel OSI 74 for Mr. Lobo and a bunch of other horror hosts.
Yes, do that.
And some real interesting stuff and fun stuff on there. So check that out. There's a plug.
Right.
So
anyway, 2002, Dr. Madblood had been on, you know, once a month for about 7 years, six, 7 years.
But still on.
But still on.
Yeah.
It looked like I was going to have to, you know, sign off because I had gotten major funding to do a puppet show. Tour puppet show around the state of Virginia. Yeah. It was a puppet show on secondhand smoke awareness through the Lung Association of Virginia. They had gotten funding from the tobacco settlement.
Oh.
And so I had funding for like around 300 puppet shows.
Oh, wow.
For the next school year. And this was in 2002.
Yeah.
So sort of my way of saying goodbye to the show was... we had a friend who was running an art gallery down in Portsmouth.
Oh, yeah.
So Deborah and I got together with this art gallery, decided that we would do an exhibit of Mad Blood stuff at this art gallery. So we had old props, we had photos, we had costumes, things like that that we put up, and we had a big opening. And. And what happened was that at the grand opening of this museum exhibit, Jerry Harrell made an announcement that we had just been offered a prime time spot on Sky 4, brand new TV station. And it was going to be prime time. Started out on Fridays and it went to... moved to Saturdays. We were doing like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And we were showing old TV shows. It wasn't movies. It was...
Which was kind of unprecedented.
Yeah.
As far as I know, in the horror host circles and all.
But we were showing Thriller. We showed Night Gallery.
Yeah.
And Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
The half hour Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And so, well, so much for that. I couldn't leave when... So I wound up touring my puppet show all over the state, and I would commute back on the nights that we shot Mad Blood.
Man.
So that version of the show, that ran for 5 years on Sky 4.
And picked up all kinds of new viewers.
Yeah, we had, young people... little children discovering the show and going to their parents and saying, hey, there's this really great show. It's got a mad scientist on it. And so we wound up...
And they're like, he's still on?
Yeah, really. And the parents who, you know, grew up watching Mad Blood themselves, they started... It became a new family thing.
Yeah.
Primetime family show. And that ran for 5 years. And then we retired... We're semi-retired now. Semi-retired. We do one show a year for Halloween for Channel 15. The airtime is October 28th at 8 p.m. on Channel 15. However, if you go to the Channel 15 website and dig around, there is a place where the Mad Blood shows that we've done for them are archived. So
it'll be streaming there. You can watch it anytime.
Yeah. So you can watch it.
And also too, Dr. Mad Blood has a YouTube channel. You can check out bits and pieces of old episodes throughout the years.
Yep. You can go to madblood.net.
Oh, there you go.
And that'll escort you to,
which is a really cool website.
Yeah.
Where you can virtually tour the Mad Blood Manor. That's pretty cool.
And thanks to our webmaster, Gary Eckstein.
Yeah,
for fantastic doing all that for so many years. So, you know, we never know from year to year. We never know what's going to happen. We usually hear sometime in August.
Yeah.
Hey, we're getting the band together at Channel 15.
Man.
And here we are.
You know, I remember that that museum exhibit was phenomenal, and the fact that it was just for the fact that it was done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody my age, a little older, a little younger, grew up in this area, watched Dr. Mad Blood.
Right.
Whether they were really into horror movies or not, they knew of Dr. Mad Blood. They'd seen it. They'd watched some here and there. Or, like me, they watched it every Saturday night. So, and to see this exhibit of this stuff, to get to see the stuff up close that you grew up watching.
Right.
Was it Star Wars props? No. But it might as well have been right. to those of us that grew up, you know, seeing this stuff every Saturday night. And it was just, it's really cool to see that that happened. I mean, how many other horrorists had an exhibit in a museum?
You know? Right. Yeah. And it was actually held over. It was supposed to be for like a month, and it wound up almost 3 months at that museum.
I know I had gone back a second time after I went that first time.
Yeah.
And I
have a house full of props that I've built for the show, and I still have all those props because I know the minute I get rid of them,
you're gonna need it.
I'm gonna need it.
You're gonna get a phone call. Hey, do you still have that?
Right.
Blah 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 piece that we used back in '82. Do you still have that?
Right. So that and puppets that you never know when you're gonna need that puppet again.
Yeah.
So that's my house. I have like 3 storage units and a garage and my house, which may someday be a museum.
Well, you make a little coin on the side conducting tours.
Oh, yeah. So anyway. So
here's the floating Mad Blood Museum exhibit.
Right. Yeah. My car.
Man. You know, another cool thing you talking about earlier about being able to see when they syndicated some of these horror hosts when cable first came around, or when we got it and you got to see Lobo and some of these other guys. That is one of the great things about the technology today. And with this stations like OSI 74 or just DVDs, we can see some of these horror hosts we just heard of.
Right, yeah.
Like before Svengoolie went nationwide like he is now, which, hey, God bless him that he is. I'd gotten a bootleg DVD at a convention because I'd heard of Svengoolie, but it wasn't syndicated here. So I was like, oh, cool. And a couple of the other ones, like I have a whole Vampyra show on DVD. I never saw Vampyra. Right. There's no way in hell I could ever see Vampyra except little snippets, you know, on documentary shows and things.
Or in Plan 9.
or in Plan 9, yeah. You know? But it's great that this art form, if you will, you know, is kept alive that way.
Right.
And there's a whole new generation of guys and girls who grew up watching Horror Host who weren't the weatherman, who weren't the anchor. They got told to do it. They're doing it now because they grew up loving these, what they saw and wanted to do this. And now they're doing it.
Right. And, you know, for a long time, not everybody could do that. But now, everybody can.
If you've got a camera or a webcam even and a computer, you can edit it right at home. And but it's amazing that it can be done. And it's really cool that people still want to watch it.
Right. And now everybody, if you've got the costume, you got the job.
That's right.
You make the job.
That's right. You make the job that, you know, be the job you want.
That's right.
But it's really cool. You know, it's a far cry from the days that I still think about great fondness and still relish, you know, that anticipation all week long.
Right.
You know, the convenience is great now to where it's like, you know, I want to watch such and such. And here we go. I can just watch it right now. There was just something special about that.
Right.
Staying up.
It was.
And
it
waiting.
Was,
and
yeah. When before there were, you know, recording devices and VCRs and stuff like that, you know, you had to be there when it was on.
Oh yeah.
And then the first couple of times that, after I joined Mad Blood, the first couple of times we went to like a local con.
Oh yeah.
People would come up to me and they would recite things that I said on the show that I had ad-libbed. They repeated them back to me, and I thought, wow, you had to be paying attention.
Now, how did that feel? Or was it really bizarre, or was it really kind of cool, or was it, A little bit of both?
It was a little of both. It was cool that they were paying attention.
Yeah.
But it was unnerving. It was unnerving. Depending upon what they were quoting, you say.
Well, yeah, there's that. Now, there's a good topic right there. Going to conventions after having done the show, because Bowman has told some fan stories, mm-hmm. without mentioning names or anything. Did any interesting, funny things happen because of the show or during an appearance or anything?
Well,
that you can tell in the family hour?
No, none of that.
Okay, good night, everybody.
none of that ever happened to me. We've gone to so many local cons, you know, at the Chesapeake Library, Central Library, and places like that. Going to that library for so long.
Mm-hmm.
People that I've met there who were fans of the show, they're now like friends of mine.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, they're part of my life.
Yeah, well, that you know, then like the Mabla exhibit, I was gonna interject. I say, here's where I figure into the story, because that's where we actually met finally. Yeah. And it was very surreal for me, because I've seen you guys on TV, and now it's like nothing because we've known each other for a great many years now. Well, once in a while, it's still like, hey, that's the guy, you know. But it's different now. But at first, it was like, hey, well, what do I say? I don't want to be that goofy, bizarre fan, like say something weird. Or, you know.
Yeah, well, but on the other hand, I like meeting people,
mm-hmm.
who watch the show. I like.
Yeah.
I think like the first con that I went of yours was at, it wasn't at your house.
Oh, over at Clayton's.
It was at Clayton's house.
Yeah, the pre-Monster Fest.
The pre-Monster Fest. I went to that, and that was great.
Yeah, we had a ball there. That was the fetus of Monster Fest.
Yeah.
Monster fetus. Boom, boom, no.
Boom, 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 boom.
It's alive.
Yeah. You know, that was a very definition of grassroots fan convention gathering, because that's... We just put the word out, hey, we're going to all get together. If you like monster stuff, come to this. And it worked out. A lot of people showed up. It's like, hey, well, let's do this somewhere else. There's an interest, you know.
That was great. And now it's every year at the Chesapeake Central Library. Monster Fest.
A lot of fun. And a lot more horror hosts showing up, which is kind of cool. You know?
That was great.
But it wouldn't be, and I've said this a number of times, it wouldn't be Monster Fest and wouldn't feel right without Dr. Mad Blood being there.
Right.
I think there was one year that he couldn't make it because he was out of town. And it was really bizarre.
Yep.
It just didn't feel right.
Yep. And there was one time when had a whole bunch of the horror hosts.
Oh, that first time we got a bunch of them.
Yeah.
There.
And
that was bizarre too, but in a good way.
Yeah, it was. And Bill Ruhlman was supposed to host the conversation with all the horror hosts, and something happened and he couldn't make it. And
that's right. Yeah.
And someone else came in to sub.
Yeah.
And
our good friend now, Sean Kotz.
And he was so moved by the experience that, He made a whole video of,
that's right,
of a retrospective of Virginia horror hosts.
Yeah, made a documentary called Virginia Creepers.
Virginia Creepers.
Yeah, because of that first gathering we had
because
at Monster
of that
Fest.
Gathering that he wound up hosting.
Yeah,
and then he's gone on and he made another newer one on Bowman Body.
Yeah. Which is still available if you go to, I guess it's bowmanbody.com, maybe. Easy to find on the internet. Or just look up Sean on Facebook.
Yeah, just look up Virginia Creepers, and there will be a link somewhere.
That's right. Virginia Creepers has its own page, which is, he did a fantastic job with that.
Oh, yeah.
Finding a lot of research, finding info on Virginia horror host I had never heard of from way back, and going all the way up through the guys who were doing it, the young upstarts, the recent guys within the last 10 years or so.
Yeah.
If you can get your hands on that Virginia Creepers, I think they discovered that Virginia was the state that had the most amount of horror hosts over the years.
Yeah, and there was, years ago, we became friends with a young lady, Elena Watson.
Oh, yeah.
We met her, you know, through Mad Blood. And,
yeah.
And she wound up writing a book on horror hosts.
Which is a very good book.
It's a very good book.
And that covers them just all over the United States.
That's from all over. There was a whole chapter on Mad Blood.
And, yeah.
And that's a wonderful book. She passed away, but the book is still there in my house.
Yeah, my copy's right over there on the shelf. Yeah.
So, you know, that was just another aspect, another way that to connect with the horror hosts.
Yeah.
And here we are. It keeps going. And
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I still find myself, if I'm up late working on something or just, you know, don't feel like going to bed yet, it's like, yeah, I can put in a movie.
Right.
You know, and sometimes I will. I'll just put in a movie. But sometimes it's like, well, let's go to the DVDs and, I could put on a Mad Blood DVD.
The wall of DVDs. Yeah.
I've got the Mad Blood DVD. I can watch an old episode or a Penny Dreadful, or I can watch one of these guys, you know, one of these other guys that I've got. Dr. Sarcophagi DVD or a Lobo or... And it's a lot of fun. Yep. I think that's the biggest thing about it is it's the horror host, it makes it more fun to watch the movie.
Right.
And some of them, they run the gamut from everything, like you said, with the earliest Dr. Shock or Zachary, where it was just a guy and that was it in a little set, or Wilkins, which was a guy in a rocking chair. And a table with a skull and a can.
Right, and a cigar in one hand and a drink in the other.
To where, then with like Mad Blood, where you have a cast of characters.
Right.
Reoccurring characters and then some one-offs and then a couple of sets.
Right, and a storyline.
And a storyline,
you know, their own storyline.
Everything in between.
Yeah.
That people are still doing these days. But yeah, it's just, it makes it fun. And it's still blows my mind that as cynical as people are today about things and about movies and stuff, that it's still alive and people, it's still thriving. There's more coming around all the time, it seems like.
And it's getting bigger and bigger.
It's
taking over the world.
Did you ever think back in 1980? I know the Dr. Mad Blood documentary that, was put out at the 30 years.
Yeah, it's for 30 years.
And now it's 42 years.
Yeah, now it's 42.
This is the 42nd year for Mad Blood. The 30th, there was a documentary made. And I think Jerry says in that, he says, well, after the first series was off, it was like 10 years. I said, well, we've had a pretty good run.
Right.
You know, we did good. And this other opportunity comes up. Well, let's keep doing it. And then after that, it was like, well, we had a good run. We'll bow out now.
Right.
Oh, you want to do another? Okay. Well, they're offering us this over here. Well, let's do some more. Okay.
Prime time. Oh, okay.
Okay. Twist our arm. But like, I think, like you said at the very beginning, you know, keep doing it until you get it right.
Yep. And that 30-year commemoration that Rachel Crockett did.
Oh, yeah. Rachel did that.
Yeah, she did that. And a lot of that, I'll brag. A lot of that grew out of the book that I started writing about Mad Blood, and I never could finish it because it's not finished.
Yeah.
But you know, I've got like, you know, two thirds or half or two thirds of it written, and I passed some of that to Rachel and she read it, and that she said, okay, you know, we need to do this, and people keep bugging me to finish the rest of the book. And I hope I live long enough to finish the book. Well,
I for one would love to read it.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be finished.
Yeah.
or there to be an ending to the book. But I'd love to read it. And you know, since the 30th documentary was done and it's been 12 years since then, there needs to be an amended edition.
Yeah.
Rachel. There could be a lot added to it with the yearly show, the Halloween shows, and then all the appearances and everything's special things and all.
Yeah, and I figured if I ever do, you know, get the book written enough that, you know, it can be published. I thought that it would be only fitting that there should be an outtake book. The stuff that didn't make it into the book.
Mistakes. That would be awesome. Well, that, you know, that's some of the greatest. Thank goodness for YouTube.
Yeah.
Because we can see all the outtakes. There's a couple of reels of outtakes, I think, on YouTube of the Mad Blood Show.
Yeah.
And, there's some great stuff.
A plethora.
On there. A plethora, if you will.
To turn it all the way around. A plethora.
And now, how many of those were actually outtakes or just mess ups that were left in because of budget and time?
Well, originally, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of editing capabilities. And so a lot of stuff was left in just because they couldn't edit it out. But a lot of those outtakes are actual outtakes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stuff that didn't make it in. But then, you know, on a lot of the shows, we'll run outtakes.
Yeah. So. Good stuff. Good stuff. Always. I'm about spent.
Now it's time to say goodnight.
Though I could talk about this all night long, horror host stuff. You know, it's just a subject that I've always loved since I was a kid and first found out about it. And just ravenous in trying to find, over the years, other horror hosts and seeing what other people are doing who are doing the same thing. Because for the longest time, all I knew was Mad Blood. Famous Monsters, of course, I'd heard of Vampire and I heard of Zachary.
Right.
Now, I've seen so many others, and it's really cool that it's still, like I keep going back to saying that, it's still going on. What started out as a local filler on local television all over the country has just become this booming, growing, I don't know, art form. I can't think of another way to
Of it came out of, you know, the Universal Pictures, you know, putting out the films.
Oh, yeah.
For TV stations to...
The original shock package.
To buy, yeah. And so, of course, they had to have something to wrap around that.
Yeah.
But
to help sell it to the audience. And now you've got the conventions like, well, you know, Monster Fest is our little convention here. And we have, you know, a handful of horror hosts. But you got Cinema Wasteland, and you got Monster Bash, and these bigger conventions. They have a ton of these guys show up.
Oh, yeah.
And it's phenomenal. It's really cool. And it's you know, it's got to be amazing that you've been a part of it. And a part of it for so long.
Right. And so many things in my early life that sort of pointed me in that direction that it just feels like fate. It's fate.
The fickle finger of fate.
It'll be my masterpiece.
The fickle finger of fate came out and went on top of the head.
On top of the head. Alrighty.
Well, thanks a lot, Greg. This has been really cool. I'm glad. I've been thinking about it and talking to Phyllis about trying to get you on here for a long time.
I know. Yeah.
And a lot of times we end up get caught up with real life and do this at the last minute. So
you can tell Phyllis she can untie me now.
Okay. So once again, thanks a lot for being on.
And thanks for having me.
And this is great. We'll have to do this again and pick another topic other than horror host. Maybe we'll talk about a movie or something. Or maybe we'll talk about horror hosts some more. We'll see.
Or crazy puppets.
That we could do that too.
All righty.
Right on. All right. Well, that's going to do it for me. Once again, thanks, Craig.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening, everybody. Good night.